Get ready for Malice, a twisted new drama starring Jack Whitehall, David Duchovny, and Carice Van Houten. Jack Whitehall plays Adam, a charming man who infiltrates the wealthy Tanner family with a hidden motive to destroy them. This edge-of-your-seat revenge thriller unravels a deliciously dark mystery in a world full of wealth, secrets, and betrayal. Malice will constantly keep you on your toes. Why is Adam after the Tanner family? What lengths will he go to? One thing's for sure, the past never stays buried, so keep your enemies close. Watch all episodes of Malice on November 14th, only on Prime Video.
Welcome to Directly Current, a podcast all about the politics of EVs in the ever-divisive USA. Today, my guest is Andrew Lambrecht, an engineering student at Clemson. He's currently finishing a senior year, and he just wrapped up a really cool summer internship at Lucid Motors, who's developing some of the most efficient and impressive technology in the EV world. When Andrew's not in school or interning at bleeding-edge companies, he's spending his time freelance reporting on electric cars for outlets like Business Insider and Inside EVs. Andrew's a great example of America's future talent feeding into the EV industry, and he spent tons of his own personal time testing all kinds of electric cars just to see what kind of bargains are to be found on the market for himself. So today, we're going to use his expertise to get nerdy and learn about the technology fundamentals and benefits of electric vehicles, and we're going to break down some of the bargains that you can find in this turbulent but never uninteresting market for used electric cars. Let's jump in. All right, Andrew, welcome to Directly Current.
Thank you, Max. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, my pleasure. First, I want to ask you, Andrew, just, you know, as a young college student still getting started in this industry, you're studying industrial engineering. What made you want to work in automotive and what made you want to work specifically with electric cars?
Sure. I think the first thing is the car is one of the most fascinating things to me, at least. And I think it's because it is the most complex piece of machinery you will buy. And it's just amazing to think about all the subsystems and components that go into a car, like everything from HVAC system to just so much years, 100 years of engineering, just the culmination of all this just goes into one product that we all take for granted. And I think automobiles are truly amazing. And I think electric cars are even more amazing in the fact that they are not only better for the environment, there's still areas where we can improve on that, but you have a vehicle that you have incredible performance, you have incredible efficiency, and gas cars can just never be as efficient as electric cars. That was probably a very sporadic answer, but I think in the realm of cars are just incredibly exciting, there's a lot going on, and electric cars are incredibly efficient. And I think humans just always have a desire to make efficient and better things, and electric cars are simply more efficient and better.
Yeah, I think that was a great answer and also speaks to your perspective, right? You're a tech guy, you're in the engineering side of this. You basically see the future, and I think most people who are pretty educated on this do, but for our listeners who aren't engineering nerds or folks like me who aren't STEM majors but are perennially fascinated by this stuff, it's important to understand that fundamentally, like you said, an automobile is a really complex machine, and internal combustion engines, which have powered our cars from very early days till now, are amazing, intricate works of art, but they're very complicated. There's lots of moving parts. Electric motors fundamentally are much simpler. And in fact, electric cars have been around as long as the automobile has been around. It's only been since the advent of newer battery technologies with newer lithium-ion chemistries that make it possible to have an electric car that goes hundreds of miles on the highway and can recharge in 20 minutes. And lots of folks don't even understand that. I speak to many people in the mainstream who are still of the mindset that an electric car necessarily takes hours to charge.
Yeah.
They have no conception of DC fast charging where cars can fill up super quickly, or battery chemistry. And I don't expect them to. They don't have a PhD in this stuff, but this is a brave new world. I just find it exciting personally because it's more efficient. It is simpler. In many ways, it is better. But I think that's a great place to begin because I want to speak to the kind of work you're doing with EVs. So you, I'll introduce to listeners, right? Worked at Lucid Motors this past summer. You interned there, and they're among the forefront of developing really efficient long-range EVs. People may have heard of them. So when you were at Lucid, I'm sure you can't talk about the exact work you were doing, What drew you to that, though, and what was the kind of manner of problems you were solving? Like, what kind of issues with electric cars were you trying to improve in your time there?
Sure. Yeah. So I think the first thing is, like, what got me more interested in Lucid was, I think Lucid is truly a company that has, I think its goals align very similarly with mine, because, like, I'm obsessed with efficiency. That's one thing that I try to do in my own personal life, whether it's just like reorienting my day, stuff like that. But Lucid, that's their sole goal on the automobile, just to make it super efficient. And I think that's the way how we can transition into a more sustainable future, is by creating more efficient products. And Lucid embodies that incredibly well by having just an incredibly aerodynamic design on their vehicles, super efficient electric motors, and the list goes on. Very efficient inverters, yeah, can accept a lot of energy really quickly to charge it up. And I think that's where the future is headed. Not so much, like, I think the Hummer EV is a really cool truck, and if I had the opportunity to drive one, I would 100% accept it. But is that vehicle going to transition us into a cleaner environment? It's more just like something, you got a lot of money, it's a pretty cool truck, it has crab walk, spend $100,000 on it, even though it's just very inefficient. Yeah. But I think that is the thing. There's just a lot of waste and inefficiency in the automotive market, and Lucid is just like this antidote.
Yeah.
But I guess the more tangibles of what I was actually working on is, I was on the charging validation team. So I was specifically working on the charging side. I tried to learn more about some other areas of the company, especially like in the MPB, which is the Wonder Box is what they call it, where basically controls all the energy going in and out of the car, stuff like that. But at least on my work, I was doing some efficiency testing on AC chargers. So basically just measuring the energy going from the charger to the Wonder Box and then through the Wonder Box to the battery, and finding areas where we can make that more efficient, and just doing all sorts of diagnostic testings on the heat generated, stuff like that, battery cell temperature. And then I did some DC testing as well. I was a little bit more interested in maybe finding some other areas of the company, because I think like aerodynamics is really cool as well and stuff like that. But at least at the company, I was working strictly on the charging system and finding areas where it could possibly be made more efficient.
Yeah. And just to break down for listeners, efficiency, like energy management, these terms may sound abstract, but in EVs, I think it's still really exciting, alluding to what I was saying earlier, like in combustion land, there are hundreds of engineers in Detroit or in Japan in areas working on one or two extra MPG. And here you have deltas in the EV world of like cars that are like Lucid, 30 to 40% more efficient than competition. And that's so exciting that you as a college student get to work on like potentially maybe working towards a couple more percentage point increases in areas like charging inverters. So when you plug it into the wall, the car can return a little bit more energy or things like that. And to make it even more concrete, right? A small change in efficiency in an electric car means you can effectively have the same range with a smaller battery. Mm-hmm. So the car is lighter. It's great for the enthusiast. It's also great for the bill of materials. Yep. It means there's fewer battery minerals that need to go into it. It means that in the US or wherever we're making them, we can make way more batteries and make way more cars with those batteries. So that's super exciting. In particular, companies like Lucid, I think, doing this work, a lot of it in the States. So lots of, I think, really cool developments there that we're seeing of basically automotive companies thinking completely from the ground up. And in the end result, I think making an efficient, better car. This isn't just a tree-hugging environmental thing. We're talking about tangibly much more usable cars for people. And that's why I like an electric car. I will admit it's not perfect at the moment. I wish it would charge a bit faster. I wish my car had more range. But companies like Lucid and lots of the companies you've covered in your writing are basically every year coming out with tangible, significant improvements, which means, okay, maybe if you bought an electric car right now, you might feel a little bad in a few years. But I think it's so exciting for anyone who's just getting their first electric car or on the fence and thinking about doing so in a few years. It means this technology is maturing really quickly.
Yep. I think you worded that eloquently. And I think one other thing I want to add as well is, going from the internal combustion engine world to the EV world is one kind of major difference. And with gas cars, performance and efficiency, they're mutually exclusive. So you can't have either one. Whereas an electric car, you can have something that's incredibly efficient. So like the Lucid Air Pure, 84 kilowatt hour battery pack, 420 miles of range, incredibly efficient car. Also, It has 430 horsepower. It's very quick, 0 to 60 with launch control in 4.5 seconds. We were out at some places, and some of my team members were pushing that car to its limits, and it's insane performance what you get. But with a gas car, it's like you can't really get a performance car unless you make it a hybrid, but then you're implementing EV components in it to make it more efficient.
Yeah.
But that's the thing with a gas car, is just you don't really get anything that's really high performance like that, but also very efficient. It's because you can get something that's efficient, like a Chevy Cruze, or well, I guess they don't make it anymore, but a Kia Nissan Versa, something like that gets like probably around 40 miles per gallon. You got to electrify it to give it better efficiency if you want to keep the performance, basically. And the Prius does it relatively well. But if you just look at the transition from early 2010s Prius, still getting around like 50, maybe low 50 mile per gallon, to now it's like maybe, what, 57? But then you look at a 2012 Model S versus 2024 Model S. It's just such a big leap in efficiency, charging, performance, just improvements all across the board.
Yeah, it doesn't take, I think, a genius to look at that combined with the rapidly diminishing cost of battery cells to see that, okay, EVs have gone from being very cool for folks in Silicon Valley with lots of money to mainstream affordable to within 5 or 10 years. I believe in the US, we're going to see EVs that are more affordable than gas cars without subsidies. I think we're moving in that direction. We can get into the China topic and all of that, because I know they're producing a lot of low-cost EVs. But I want to talk to you as an enthusiast, as someone in the industry. That's a really interesting point you brought up, with like the fact that the performance and the economy is not exclusive, because everyone likes to hear, okay, the car is cheaper to run. And I think lots of people like the emotional element of, oh, this car's quick. And electric cars do pretty effortlessly deliver that. So I do want to just touch on that excitement. I think it's important for us to not lose that, like, lots of car buyers connect with cars at some kind of degree of an emotional level. They want something that can, what is a car, right? Mm-hmm. It's a thing to move you from place point A to point B, but ideally it does it in an exciting way. You can launch it up a hill if you want to. You can tow with it if you want to. You can go to high altitude. And these are all things electric cars can actually deliver, right? Torque. Yeah, in Colorado, here in the mountains, a mile or two above sea level up in Vail, you can actually, with a Rivian or a Silverado EV, you can tow better than even some diesel trucks, because the power delivery holds up to altitude because electric motors don't need to breathe, right? Mm-hmm. There's all these kinds of improvements you have. And of course, the range is more limited than that. And that's an area folks are struggling with. But speaking to the work you did, also just your time daily driving EVs, you've been in a bunch. Right now, you're in a Polestar 2. I think that...
Yes, unfortunately, I dropped it off this morning. And now I'm back in the Model 3 that has been T-boned. Got to get that fixed.
Oh, gosh. Okay. Okay. I hope you were able to get that fixed. I know the Tesla service backlogs are growing, but you've been in so many EVs. As a EV driver, what are the kinds of just practical considerations towards making it convenient to own? Because I think that helps connect the dots for people from this abstract of, okay, I need a totally new way of fueling this. Yeah. It's completely different. But now you were just telling me, I was on your podcast, that like you had a rental Mazda CX-5. It's not a bad car. And you just couldn't do it.
You're
like, I need to be back in an electric car. Yeah. What is it?
Yeah, because I think that's the thing. Because it's a learning curve to get an electric car. But once you're in this learning curve, you just think about things in a more efficient manner. You think about things in an efficient lens. So you just have efficiency as like your number one thing. For instance, for me, here at Clemson, I have a student EV parking permit, so I get free charging. So you literally just buy the permit for $26 for the year, and then you get free access to all the chargers. And in the last week, when I was just piling on miles on that Polestar, I got $36 in electricity in that car, which is pretty insane. And I think now it's just when I park a car, I'm like, the car's sitting there idle. I don't care what car anyone drives. Whenever they park their car, it's just sitting there idle. So at least now you got a level 2 charger. You can factor, it's probably going to charge about maybe, let's just say 10 kilowatts, make it an easy number to work with. And then if it's sitting for 5 hours, you multiply 10 by 5, that's 50 kilowatt hours of electricity, which is a little bit less than most EV batteries. So if you got, I don't know, let's just say a Kia EV6, which is around 80 kilowatt hours, you can charge that battery 5/8 the way, considering it was almost empty when you put it there. But it's just a car sitting there. It's just all this energy that you can be taking while it's sitting there. So I think that's one of the cool things about electric cars. And Because everyone's, oh, it's going to take 8 hours to charge them. Well, yes, but where is your car sitting right now? Chances are it's probably in a parking lot or maybe at home. Yeah. So if it's just sitting there idle, why not just charge it? And yeah, I think that's a huge thing. That's at least my kind of rationale, is if the car is sitting, it may as well just be charging. But then obviously you have DC fast charging, which is a lot quicker. But I think that's just the mindset I've gotten in. And especially like when I was out in California, where energy is a lot more money, at Lucid, they had free level one charging. So there was literally just a power socket, you bring your own cord. And I'm like, okay, it's only around maybe 1.5 kilowatts, but if I'm sitting there for the day, they'll probably give me like what, like 40 miles of range. And my commute was like 4 miles. So I got more range sitting there than I did using to get to work.
Yeah, it's a good deal. And I think it's important to break down too for folks. There are these two different models to think about it. So what you just said, right? Level two charging for lots of areas like your campus parking lot while you're in class, or it could be a movie theater, it could be a library. You're somewhere for 3 or 4 hours just doing your thing. Your car can be gaining appreciable energy. Yeah. And that's hugely significant. And then you even have level one, which in the US refers to just our normal wall socket. You can literally, I never have range anxiety in the sense of I'm going to die, because you could knock on a stranger's door and with a long enough extension cord, charge your car. Like electricity at a fundamental level with our modern world is pretty accessible. And maybe there's some stretches of Wyoming or Nebraska or North Dakota that are a bit harder in EVs for sure. But with even a moderate amount of infrastructure, it's pretty usable. And for road trips, we use the DC fast charging you mentioned. That's the much faster charging for cars. It also costs a lot more. The infrastructure is way more expensive, requires way more deployment, way more cooperation with the utilities. And crucially, right, as a driver, you're paying more. So I think it sounds like to me, when you're driving that Polestar 2, almost all of those $36 you spent were probably at DC fast chargers. Yeah. Paying for a much higher rate per kilowatt hour, which is, that's the base unit we think of for EVs, right? With gas cars, it's gallons of gas. With an EV, it's a kilowatt hour. So you said EV6, very common SUV people like to drive, Kia EV6, 80 kilowatt hour battery. It's fairly standard. If an Electrify America station is 50 cents a kilowatt hour, that's $40. Yeah. DC fast charging does not necessarily save money over gas. And I think just to clear up for people, if you've seen headlines of driving an EV is no cheaper than gas, it's probably because whoever wrote that story was just using one of those stations without any kind of preferred member pricing and not charging at home. And we have to get into, not everyone can charge at home or charge at work or school, but it's increasingly really possible. Yeah. And if you can do it, it does save a lot of money.
Yeah, and especially at work too. Like even if you work at like maybe a smaller company that doesn't have a like level two charger there, like I'm sure if you ask them, you're like, hey, there's a socket literally right there. Like, I'm sure they probably wouldn't mind. But yeah, a lot of workplaces now have level two charging. And I think you can live, I mean, I live at college in an apartment and I just charge on campus. It works really well for me. Obviously, this is a really specific circumstance I'm in, but I'm sure there's a lot of other people in various circumstances where they can live in an apartment and charge their car at work.
You can make it work lots of ways. And for Clemson or for a big institutional customer, for them, a level one or a level two conduit and feeding 32 or 40 amps into your car is pennies. It is very little. I mentioned in Electrify America stations, 50 cents a kilowatt hour. The wholesale rate of electricity, like residentially in most places, is about 10 cents a kilowatt hour, one fifth of that. And if you're Clemson, I'm sure they're paying less, right? Yeah. They're probably leveraging some kind of off-peak solution, or they have a connection with the state utility company or someone. For lots of offices, businesses, it's essentially a write-off for them to offer their clients or their students or their employees, whomever, free charging. And if you can make it work in your apartment, if you can find that, get a grant or just front sometimes $1,000 or $2,000, I know it's not cheap, but if you can front that to install the level two charging, you never effectively think about it because you can just plug in your car overnight, maybe every couple of nights, and always have a close to full battery.
And like over the summer, like I relied pretty much solely on level one, at least for daily driving. And it wasn't ideal because like sometimes you get back from like a road trip and you just want to charge up quick, but like you can still make it work. And especially if it's your second car, it's if you have one gas or hybrid car and then you get one other EV, I don't even know what it is, but even some of these cars you can get, like a Fiat 500e, you can pick up for $5,000 now. And you can easily use that car on level one only and just use it to drive around town. And I think level one is possible.
Yeah, there is, I think, an American tendency in particular for folks to want one vehicle that does everything.
Yeah.
And this is why probably people like to buy crossovers and SUVs now. And they're making BMW and some of the more premium brands have crossovers that can also perform really well on the track and do all of these things and have insanely complex engineering to do all these things because consumers want one vehicle to do it all. But I think if you're of a more pragmatic mindset and you have the garage space with your family or the parking availability, and you could have your old reliable gas car for road trips, you're not ready for electric yet, and a Fiat 500e or an old BMW i3 or one of those little city cars.
I love the i3.
And you live in a suburb or city and you don't drive more than 60 miles in a day. I've met so many people who are not like you or I, like electric vehicle evangelists, who just use it for that, have a little city car, and they love that use case. It's so easy.
Mm-hmm. And that's the thing too, that I think is the most, like, the EV owners who I love talking with are the people who like don't really come in with any preconceived notions. And they're just like, they just look at the like numbers and they're like, huh, this makes sense. And then they end up getting a car like that, like an i3 or some like really good option, probably not for a lot of money. And they just end up loving the cars because they just make so much sense.
Yeah. If you're looking at a Lucid Gravity SUV, a BMW iX, don't get me wrong. There are electric vehicles like you and I talked about in the beginning with performance and range and all of this stuff. Mm-hmm. But that's where we get into the different stereotype of, oh my gosh, this is so expensive. The average Joe can't afford this. So the kind of last thing I wanted to talk with you about is not only your experience with lots of EVs, but I feel like your experience in particular with deal hunting and like observing the both crashing prices of EVs in the used market, as well as the litany of federal and state incentives that make these pretty cheap to own for lots of people adopting them.
Yeah. So I think with the incentives is, especially the used EV tax credit for $4,000 is insanity. I think it just lowers the price to entry so much for a lot of cars. And like, for instance, so my Model 3, which is going to have to be serviced now, but thankfully the other driver has all the fault assigned to them. So it was unfortunate.
Not out of your pocket.
Yeah, nothing out of my pocket. But I got a Model 3 2021 long range all-wheel drive with a performance boost and like about 40,000 miles. And I was able to get that for low 20,000 range thanks to the EV tax credit. And it's just when you just look at the numbers on that car about how quick it is, just all the features, it's pretty good range, not quite as good as the new ones because old Teslas are notorious for not getting anywhere near EPA range. But overall, a really solid car in that price range. It's what else can you get in that price range if you're looking for similar stuff? It's because the thing is, it's like people are like, oh, Polestar 2 or Model 3 used, like those cars will compare them to a Toyota Camry or something. But it's like a Camry is not on the same echelon of those two cars.
It's never, a Camry has never inspired anyone to put their foot on the pedal. A Model 3 or a Polestar 2, even a base one will do that.
For sure. And so I think that's the thing. It's like, when you can't really find a similar gas-powered car that has the reliability, performance, and efficiency of any of these cars. So I think just electric car prices are coming down in general, but the EV tax credit does definitely help a lot of buyers. I think some dealers are like being a little like sneaky with it, like advertising the price in and stuff like that, which is really unfortunate. And I think one trend that's a little concerning is, so the EV tax credit is bringing down the barrier to entry for these cars. So you can now get like 2022 Chevy Bolts for around like maybe 16, 15,000. But the interesting thing is 2023 model years, which don't qualify because the cars need to be 2 years old to qualify, are actually about the exact same price without the tax credit. So meaning dealerships, if they don't qualify for the tax credit, the dealers are just going to have to lower the price to compete with the ones that do qualify for the tax credit. And
for our policy wonks, this is the effect of the Inflation Reduction Act.
Yeah.
In one sense, it lets you get a Model 3 for $20,000. In other ways, it causes all these kind of weird secondhand effects on the market for used cars.
Yeah. And so that's a little unfortunate. But I think for the new EV tax credit, I think it's done a pretty good job of getting the Model Y is incredibly popular, as we both know. And when you get it with the tax credit, you're like talking in the mid 30,000 range for a 320-mile range SUV, which is just pretty crazy to think about just how much the market's changed from a few years ago, where the only affordable option would have probably been like a Chevy Bolt or something, maybe a Kona EV.
It's a little bit of a bitter pill to swallow, I think, for folks who were buying an EV 3 or 4 years ago when there was a demand craze, there weren't many options on the market, and they may have been paying like $65,000 for a Model Y, and now that Tesla is worth a third of that, maybe. The depreciation has been steep. It's made like a Mercedes S-Class look like a good residual. It's been insane to witness. And it's exciting for you or I, who neither of us at this moment have a lot of capital, and we're getting into some of our first major cars we're owning. That's awesome. We can get into a really exciting car for cheap. But it's the early adopter tax. We see this in lots of industries. People who buy in early, it's not the best financial decision. They've had their fun, for sure, with the car themselves.
Yeah, because we see it with Cybertruck. Values were insane when they first came out. Now they're lowering a lot. Hummer EV, Rivian, all these cars that early adopters really wanted them, so they paid an insane amount of money, but now they're definitely coming down in price. But I think, especially if we just want to discuss like the used EV market, just how much they've come down is pretty incredible. And because I think I'm actually writing a story on this right now, which is a Volvo C40, which is on the same platform as the Polestar 2. And you can get them now, 2023s even. So they won't even qualify for the tax credit because they're too new. You can get them now for 25,000 used, which is insane to think about. Now, granted, a lot of these are ex-rentals, but like they're still under the basic warranty. So if anything drastically wrong happens. But yeah, I think just the fact that you can now get really good cars for not a lot of money is a lot of the, it's going to be a lot, it's going to be good momentum for the EV industry for sure.
Yeah. And I think it makes the upfront cost, which used to be a really hard pill to swallow for people, much better and much easier just to own. In addition to what we mentioned, the lower costs with charging, lower maintenance costs, these are simpler machines after all. So it's super exciting times, still turbulent. If you're an early adopter, there's a little bit of a tax there. But Andrew, thank you so much for joining me on this. If people want to find your work, you write all over the place. You've been in Inside EVs. You've been at, I think, Business Insider. Where can people easily find what you're doing?
Yeah. So right now I'm primarily writing for Business Insider and Inside EVs. I toned down a little bit of the work at Inside EVs just because I had to leave when I started writing or when I started working for Lucid. I have a few articles I'm working on.
And you're still in college, I have to remind people. You're a senior now, right?
Yes, senior. I don't have too much time, but I'm working on some really exciting stories coming up soon. The Polestar one, I'm really excited about. Just talk about my experience with that and like a few more.
That's a very cool hybrid, very unique, one-of-a-kind car. You've got a podcast too, right?
Yes, it's called the Current Review Podcast. And you're my second guest, and I have bunch of other people lined up. So I think it's going to be pretty exciting. And I'm happy to get back into the podcasting game because I feel like it's been a while since I've done one.
Awesome. Happy to do a podcasting exchange. And if people want to listen to more nerding out on EVs, the kind of stuff I frankly listen to a lot, they can hear it with the Current Review with what you're hosting. So super exciting. And I'm sure you have a lot of bright opportunities ahead of you in the EV industry.
I appreciate it, Max. Thanks for having me on.
Once more, thanks to Andrew for coming on Directly Current. And thank you, listener, for sticking it through the end of the episode. You can subscribe for more upcoming episodes. And trust me, we have some flagship headline guests coming up. It's going to be really cool. But in the meantime, you can rate us or give us a thumbs up if you're on YouTube. You can also check out evpolitics.org to look at all kinds of news, data, and very, very relevant info about the American EV Jobs Alliance. So if you want to learn about the topics we explore in this podcast in even more depth, please do go there. Once again, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.